Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Wednesday, June the 1st, 2022. First day of the month of June, 13 minutes past the hour, 73 degrees and sunny skies here in Marion. High pollen counts today, so if you are an allergy sufferer, pay attention to that because it's going to be a rough day for you out there. We're going to kick off the morning this morning talking about something I know a lot of people in Marion have been talking about the last few days. It is the standoff that happened here in Marion on Sunday morning. I believe the call came in Saturday night, which led to the apprehension of Raymond L. Wilson at a Red Roof Inn in Columbus yesterday, May the 31st. We're so glad this morning to be kicking the morning off with the Marion Police Chief, Jay McDonald. Chief McDonald, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Hey, Chief, kind of take us through what happened Saturday night. People are kind of confused with this story. Just kind of start from the beginning and take us through yesterday.
Well, on the 28th, officers responded to a home on Johnson Street about 11 o'clock at night for a report of a domestic violence. Through their investigation, the charges were prepared for Raymond Wilson for domestic violence and abduction. Mr. Wilson was not present when officers arrived on the 28th. On the 29th, about 8:15 in the morning or so, officers went back to Johnson Street to look for Mr. Wilson, and they knocked on the door. They believed they heard somebody inside. They called on the phone and spoke to Mr. Johnson, who said he was inside and wasn't going to come out. Some of the neighbors believed him to be inside as well, and that led to the standoff.
Chief, this is where I think a lot of the confusion came. Was he ever in the house on Sunday morning?
He says no. We're still trying to determine if that's accurate or not, but when he was arrested yesterday, he said no, he was not.
How would something like that happen? Is that just one of those things that goes along with the job?
Well, I don't know. We're certainly trying to figure out how that happened, but we had every indication to believe that he was in the house, including the words that he said himself. The officers believed he was in the house based on their observations. And when we were on the phone with him, he was making comments that he knew what we were doing outside, and his comments were accurate. So that led to us believing he was in the home.
When the home was fine, how long did the standoff last on Sunday?
From beginning to end, about 14 hours.
14 hours. When you guys finally entered, what was the thought at that point?
I was disappointed that it didn't end in an arrest. I fully believed he was in there. And just because of all of the circumstances surrounding it, and you know, every decision that got made that day was made with the intention of preventing violence. And you know, we could have run in earlier and had provoked a violent confrontation. And every decision we made that day was to prevent that from happening, and we thought that's what we were doing the entire time we were there.
You know, Chief, a lot of people brought up the question yesterday, with all the cell phone technology and all the internet technology we have now, is there a way to pinpoint where somebody's using a cell phone?
Yes and no. There are ways for which people can hide their cell phone data, and there are different carriers have different capabilities about pinpointing where things are, but rest assured, we did our due diligence, and the result back was that this person wasn't using cell phone towers. So, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
So at this point, he says he was not in the house at all on Sunday, but we really don't know that for sure.
We don't know it for certain, and we're certainly investigating to see if that's true.
If, and I know speculation is something you can't do a whole lot of, but if he was in the house, would you have any idea how he would have gotten out in that 14 hours without anybody seeing him?
Absolutely not. The house was, I tend to believe he was not there, because that house was surrounded by officers and then SWAT team members, from the very beginning. So I don't know how he could have got out. I tend to believe, while I sit here today, that he wasn't in there, and that he was perpetrating a scam on us that disrupted an entire neighborhood.
Absolutely. Now, take us through yesterday. Did the tips immediately come in, or did you guys have a pretty good idea of where he was after the standoff?
No. We were able to track him to that Red Roof Inn through police work. No one called and told us he was there, and he was arrested by the Columbus SWAT team without incident in that hotel room.
Now, because of the incident that happened on Sunday, will there be more charges added than would have been in the beginning?
Oh, yeah. He's in much greater jeopardy than if he would have been there and was arrested without incident. There are charges connected to the standoff part that never would have come had he been arrested without incident. So he made a bad situation much, much worse. Mm.
When we look at people who do bad things today, has technology made life much more difficult for the police department?
Well, it always seems that we are trying to catch up to the latest technology, and that technology has enabled us to solve lots of crimes, but it seems that we're often one step behind in the advancement of technology. That's for sure.
Chief, you say you had contact with him on Sunday. During this 14-hour period, how long was it before you went in since the last time you had contact with him?
We had we had about 6-7 hours worth of phone conversation with Mr. Wilson, and we didn't go in. We didn't fire the first round of tear gas until about 3 o'clock, and we were there at 8:25, 8:15, something like that. And we didn't go in until around 9 o'clock at night.
Mm. Now, at that point, do we know? Is this just a game he was playing, or
what my belief is that he was thinking he was furthering his flight by occupying us at that house.
When we look at how, because this was one of those stories that made Columbus media on Sunday, do you think it had to do with the standoff or the fact that nobody was apprehended in the standoff?
Well, I think it was both. We were getting inquiries from the media, both local and outside of Marion, while the standoff was going on. Obviously, I think the fact that he was not in the house when we went in, I think makes this story different than the typical outcome, and so I think that furthered it along. But certainly, those media inquiries were happening while we were there. There was media on site, and there was a whole neighborhood of people with cell phones. So I think that obviously it was an item of interest to the community.
You know, Chief, when something like that is going on, and of course, you know, being a radio station, we're all for freedom of the press, but does it make it more difficult? Because now, if you're on the internet, you're considered media. If you stream anything, you can say you're media. Is there some kind of a credential now that you need to be on site in a case like that?
Well, everyone, including the media, was kept outside the perimeter. That's how it was. The residents who didn't want to evacuate, we tried to move them to safe parts of their house, their basement, or as far away from the target house as we could. But they were the only ones inside the perimeter of where we kept the bystanders out. Mm.
You know, all stories have a minor shelf life, I think, in our minds. But with this one and how it played out with him not being in there, was there any disappointment or just we need to continue this or maybe next time there's something we can do differently? Was there any of that when this was over?
Well, there always is. Every major incident we have leads us to get together, debrief, to see what we did well, what we need to do better at. With the information we had, I would not have changed any of the decisions I made along the way. Obviously, the result was not what we wanted, but every decision was made to protect human life, whether that be for the neighbors, whether that be for Mr. Wilson, or whether that be for the responding officers. Now, the fact that he wasn't in there and that we did not end Sunday night with an arrest was a disappointment, and I realize that, and I understand that. However, I'd much rather have that than have pressed the issue early on and enforced a violent confrontation that could have resulted in a loss of life. And that was our guiding factor. And, you know, I've seen some internet chatter. I've tried to stay away from the comments, but, comparing this to the school shooting in Texas, and why did we wait when we're supposed to go in? And those are not the same thing. The training for active shooters when shooting is actively occurring is to go in immediately, without hesitation. And the training with somebody who's supposed to be in a house by themselves threatening suicide is to delay, 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 and keep talking and keep talking and keep talking, which is exactly what we followed in this incident. Like I said, that the decisions that were made were made to limit the potential for a violent confrontation and to try to achieve a peaceful result. And those were the outcomes that drove each decision that was made that day. And so I think the decisions were right. I think the information we had was wrong. And, we have to look and see how we got wrong information and what we can do to prevent that in the future.
Do you think the sheer time, and you just obviously described a suicide situation and so on and so forth of why you did not go in and not an active shooter. Do you think the sheer time of the 14 hours and then him not being in there has led to whatever criticism there is on the internet and other places?
Oh, I'm sure it does. That 14 hours was long for the neighborhood. It was long for the officers. We understand that. But we will still make decisions now and in the future based on the preservation of life. And if those situations take 1 hour or 14 hours or 48 hours, that's what we'll do. Because, taking a life, losing a life, is an irrevocable situation. And always trying to obtain a peaceful result is the goal.
So if you had to do this over again, at this point, knowing what you knew on Saturday night and Sunday morning, you would do it exactly the same way?
With the information we had, the decisions were right. The issue is how did we obtain the wrong information and what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen again? And with every major incident, we will always debrief and learn from those incidents what we can to be better in the future. I think that's what every successful organization needs to do, whether it be law enforcement or anything else.
Chief, in our last few minutes here, this is an interesting event because it kind of plays into a statement that you made that got a lot of coverage in the newspaper a few weeks ago. And I'm just paraphrasing here the quote that you gave, that Marion doesn't so much have a crime problem, that we do have crime like all other cities and towns, but that we have a self-esteem issue. And when something like this happens, and I thought that was a very profound statement to make, when something like this happens, here comes the criticism, here comes the Columbus media, oh, there was a 14-hour standoff, and nobody was in there, and after the Texas shooting, and so on and so forth, everything we've mentioned. Do you think this plays once again into that quote that you gave, that here we are knocking ourselves again in a situation where, thank goodness, nobody was harmed?
Well, yeah, I don't know if these things are corollary. What I was trying to say when I spoke to the Rotary was that there seems to be a very negative perception of our community led by some members of our community that influences how we're viewed and how we view each other. And I think it holds our community back. On this scenario, I think that there is always going to be criticism of law enforcement, no matter where it is, and that the people who want to look for faults in law enforcement certainly aren't going to hold back in a scenario like this. But you know, we too were disappointed nobody was in there. And the main reason we were disappointed was not because we took 14 hours, not because we disrupted a neighborhood, not because some people thought that could be a disappointment. The main reason we were disappointed it didn't end in arrest was the victim wasn't able to obtain the peace that comes with that arrest at 11 o'clock at night and had to wait till 9 o'clock the next morning. But we worked hard to make an arrest in a violent case, and we did so without any injury. Certainly there are things we need to look at, But all in all, I'm proud of the work our people did.
And how is the victim at this point?
She seems to be, in our conversations with her, ready to move forward with this case and to move forward overall.
You know, Chief, just to clarify here, when you say with your speech at Rotary that there are forces that are hurting the self-esteem of Marion by saying things, what are those forces or sources?
Well, what I'm talking about is when the Cardinals went up around town, people were like, "Oh, they'll be destroyed in a weekend." Or when people are talking about new businesses going downtown, people say, "There's no one will go down there. Downtown's just for drunks and criminals." And when we talk about you know, drugs in this community, people think that this is the only community with drugs. And we certainly have challenges. There's no doubt about that, and every community does. But we have seen a steady decrease in crime numbers from 2014 through the end of 2021 that we should be proud of. 80% reductions in burglaries and breaking and enterings, and 50% reduction in overall theft crimes, and those types of things. And but people in this community just want, not everybody certainly, and I think it's a minority. But there are people in this community who want to focus on, they think Marion is a bad place to be, and I don't see it that way. I moved here in 1994, and I married a Marion girl and raised Marion kids, and I'll be buried in this town. This town has been very good to me and very good to lots and lots of other people like you, Scott. So when the constant negativity comes, I bristle because I see a lot of good in this community where I spend 85 hours every 2 weeks out interacting with this community. I mean, this standoff, while we're out there, the neighbors are bringing us water and snacks. The certified is bringing us water to make sure that they're offering us to sit in the shade in their backyard. That shows the good people we have in this community. That doesn't happen everywhere, and it doesn't happen by accident. Decades and decades and decades from people who served in this police department long before I did built that. And this is a good town and a good place to be and a good place to raise your family. And I'm proud to be on this Marion Police Department. I'm proud to be a City of Marion resident.
In summation, just looking back on this, at this point, how would you explain this situation to somebody who maybe had not heard anything about it? What is the story on this particular past weekend?
Well, the story is that there was, you know, a credible allegation of a violent crime, and the police reacted to that allegation in a way that was designed to protect human life, and it took us longer than we hoped, but it ended in a peaceable arrest.
And I do want to let everybody know again that the suspect was located and arrested yesterday, May the 31st, Raymond L. Wilson at the Red Roof Inn. At a Red Roof Inn in Columbus, Ohio. Chief, before I let you go, I do want to let you know, we appreciate the press releases. And in this press release, as I said yesterday on the morning, on the show yesterday morning, you know, I'm sure it's not the greatest feeling after 14 hours when you go in and somebody's there, but to be as detailed and as honest as you were in the press release does not always happen. And I think, you know, taking ownership of that with the media just being as detailed in that press release as you were and as updated is certainly a commendation for your group and the people who work there, because sometimes that doesn't always happen. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. We try to be as transparent as we can. We hope that helps us build trust in the community. When things go our way and when things don't go our way, we're going to be upfront about it.
Hey, Chief, thanks for the call. Thanks for the press release, and hope everything continues well for you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Police Chief Jay McDonald. So that now you know the whole story. 73 degrees and sunny skies here in Marion. June the 1st, 2022, 35 minutes past the hour. Well, now we know that it looks as if, and again, everything's allegedly right now, that this man was not in the house during the 14 hours on Sunday. Now, he says he was, but it's not believed that he was. And we learned something there, I think, about cell phones. 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038. Any thoughts on this? Give me a buzz. As I said, it's a high pollen day, so you might have to help me out here this morning so my throat doesn't go out. Glenn Coble will be on from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. today. And then we've got Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman for 10 p.m. today. We've got Live at 5 with Pastor Craig and Nate and Terry from 5:10 until 6 p.m. And the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon, 6:10 to 7 p.m. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Scott, you remember when Adam was trying to get you to do an interview with Queen Elizabeth?
Oh, yes, yes.
I was watching CBS this morning, and in her 70 years, he's never done an interview.
Yeah, you know, the Queen and the Pope are the two that everybody wants to interview, and I don't think either one has ever done an interview.
In 70 years, no interview. That's amazing.
Why do you think the Queen doesn't do interviews?
I don't know.
You think there are things she just doesn't want to talk about?
Don't want to be held accountable for anything, I guess.
You know, I've always thought the reason the Queen doesn't do it is because there's a little bit of a mystique around the monarchy, and I think once she would speak like a normal person, not that she's not a normal person, but once she does that and talks about her grandkids and her husband who's passed away, it kind of makes it seem not so mysterious anymore. That,
right, yeah.
You know, I've always thought that's why they don't do interviews. What do you make of the situation on Sunday, the standoff?
That's amazing. I don't know. It turned out he wasn't in there.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that we think all this technology makes everybody readily available? Well, apparently it doesn't.
Well, nobody got killed, right?
No. Thank goodness.
That's the main thing. Nobody got killed.
Yeah, I think it's just, and he was apprehended yesterday, so it's not like it didn't end with an apprehension. So that was good. I think it was just this the sheer length of the 14-hour standoff and the fact that he was not believed to be in the home. He says he was, but they don't think so.
Well, I don't know how he could have been in there, really.
Well, yeah.
I'm sure they was watching every... Does he have a tunnel?
Well, that's what I think the question is. But, you know, they were on the phone with him, so that's what made it interesting, is that he was communicating with them clearly by cell phone, and clearly there are cell phones or landlines or whatever he was using that you cannot track.
Yeah, so, you know, so he could have been somewhere else.
Yeah.
He could have been close by at another house watching the situation.
Well, you know, the call came in on Saturday night. So my guess would be, just theorizing, and I hate to do that in a case like this, was that he probably wanted to get out of town as soon as he knew that, I don't want to say his girlfriend or whatever she would have been, significant other, had made a complaint.
Well, we're getting about like Columbus anymore.
Well, did you find it interesting, though, that the police chief said there are areas in crime, and I think overall he said, that crime is down in Marion. Now, if you went and asked somebody that, I don't think they would say that.
Yeah, I don't think we have a bad problem with crime, but, you know, all these things, you know, happen, and it's going to happen here in Marion, too.
Why do you think we have such an issue with self-esteem that we, and again, I'm not saying that we should not point out things when they're odd or bad. It's just we seem to be particularly down on ourselves.
Well, we don't give ourselves praise when praise is due. And a lot of times, you know, people don't do that, but, you know, it's easier to be down on yourself than, you know.
Well, I just hope we can pull out of that, because it's clearly there are a lot of good things going on in the community, and the fact that this suspect was apprehended yesterday, you know, I did not see nearly the press on him being apprehended as the 14-hour standoff, which, again, I think says something about where we are as a society.
I wouldn't want to move away from Marion. I mean, I think we have a pretty good community, pretty good people. You know, there's a lot worse places you could live than Marion.
Yeah, you know, I was sad. I went to McDonald's yesterday, and the 59-cent McMuffins and the $1 double cheeseburgers have ended.
Yeah, that's I sent somebody there yesterday to get me some, and it was already in.
Apparently, it all wrapped up on the 27th, was my understanding.
Just get buying 10 at a time. I'm going to buy two or three at a time.
You know, what is the price difference between, I mean, they're a dollar when they're on sale. What's the regular price of those?
$2.19.
$2.19. Isn't that something?
So I just buy 10 at a time and stick them in the refrigerator and, you know.
Yeah, did you do anything fun for Memorial Day?
No, just watch TV, and too bad there wasn't no sports on Memorial Day.
You know, I was talking about
Memorial
this.
Memorial Day is not a big sports thing, and then the golf tournament don't even happen until after Memorial Day.
You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, or maybe I said it on the air, that people who play taps come out on Memorial Day, but taps must be a lot harder to play than I think, because a lot of people tend to not get that exactly right.
Could be. Yeah, I can't play an instrument.
No, I never played an instrument either, but, you know, can you imagine the Queen's been around for 70 years?
Yeah, been in power for 70 years.
70. How old is she now? 96, 97?
Yeah, something like that.
Do you think she'll ever step down?
Oh, no.
Goodness.
The only way maybe she'd step down is if she was really bad off, possibly.
Going to stay in the job till the bitter end.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for calling.
Yep.
Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 42 minutes past the hour, 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038. Give us a call. 76 degrees and sunny skies here in Marion. Any thoughts on the standoff that happened on Sunday or anything else on your mind? We can chat about it here this morning. 740-751-4038. And again, we thank Police Chief Jay McDonald for joining us this morning. Always nice to hear from the chief. Again, phone lines open, 43 minutes past the hour, 740-751-4038. Can you believe it's June the 1st? But apparently a very high pollen day is what I'm being told. So hopefully we all survive this pollen attack that is going on right now. Okay, let's take the call here. All right. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Scott. I get so confused. I called the other number first, and I realized it.
I know. It's a switch up right now.
I'm supposed to call your number, yeah. Hey, just touching base with you to make sure everything is okay on your end for tomorrow.
Yeah, as far as I know, I think everything's good. And the ribbon cutting will happen at 5, right?
Five, yes, mm-hmm, right. The museum will be open from 4 to 7, because as I think I've mentioned before, we're going to do an opening for the Woodland Elves, Sherry Williamson's Woodland Elves collection. And I took a look at that yesterday for the first time since they got the exhibit done. It's fascinating. It'll be especially interesting for kids to see that. And we'll have her books available and all that. And then hopefully we're going to have a soft opening on the Buckeye Telephone Museum also tomorrow, but the featured, of course, is Mary Ellen's exhibit, which will officially open at 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So, did some checking yesterday, and we used to have a phone line in that particular room, but that one has been taken out. However, I did find that there still is an active one in Trella's old office, but you're going to need about 80 feet of phone cord.
Okay.
To tie into that, so I thought I'd better let you know.
Now, you guys do have a good Wi-Fi signal there.
Yes,
though, right?
We do have a good Wi-Fi system, too, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So hopefully we can. Now, and we should let people know, Mary Ellen will be there for the event.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And a special guest.
Yes. Yeah. Now, as far as the museum goes, for people who haven't seen it, who want to come out and see it tomorrow, how would you describe it?
Well, of course, anybody that remembers going to the post office years ago, we acquired the building in 1989, but anybody that remembers going to the post office probably didn't get any farther than the lobby when you come in the front door. So beyond the lobby is the atrium area, and that exhibit changes every year. So this year we're featuring what was going on in Marion in the 30s. So that's something that rotates out at the end of every year, and we bring a new one in the spring. Of course, we've got the Buckeye Telephone Museum, which will be opening tomorrow, and Sherry Williamson's Woodland Elves, which will be opening tomorrow. Both of those are located on the first floor. Of course, Prince Imperial is always there. He never changes. That's a fascinating exhibit for a lot of people. And in the rear of the museum, under the big top, of course, is the Popcorn Museum, which was something that George Brown started years and years ago from all of his work of collecting and restoring popcorn-related memorabilia, machines, wagons. We even had a Model T Ford that was specifically built to drive around to serve popcorn and roasted peanuts out of. And then downstairs, of course, we have the Harding Rooms. We have our general store, the Racket. A lot of people call it the old Racket store. And, of course, a Victorian bedroom. We have a great exhibit on aviation history in Marion. And then, of course, the new opening for Mary Ellen's a collection of memorabilia for a career that spanned, oh my word, 50 years, 60 years, whenever her first election was to the River Valley School District. I don't remember the date.
Now, when you go into her part of the Historical Society, now her museum, what strikes you? What being an obvious history?
Well, we have the dress that Mary Ellen wore when she was inaugurated. That's a very crucial part of history. That will be displayed in a case all by itself. She has so many fascinating photographs with immensely famous people. I mean, Obama, she has a photograph of Obama, of course, Biden, Bill Clinton, Al Gore, a couple of photographs in there of Tommy Lasorda with her. Just, of course, she was a great friend with John Glenn. She gave John a $20 bill that he carried into outer space when he went back on the shuttle when he was in his 70s. That is in there. It's hard to pick one item, Scott, really, because she has people from her generation saved everything, and she saved all of those items, which we're so glad she did, because it just makes a fantastic display. And of course, you saw her exhibit when it was still over at Primrose, and we have so much more room for her now, and it's so much more organized. It tells a story, so I think people will be really amazed at what is in there.
You know, it's interesting to talk. Obviously, thank goodness Mary Ellen is still with us and still healthy. But what do you think her place in history is in Marion County?
Well, I think her place in history has been denoted not just in Marion County, but worldwide, and especially in the United States, being the only individual, male or female, to ever hold the offices of county treasurer, state treasurer, and U.S. treasurer. No other person holds that distinction and probably never will. So I think that's probably the thing that most people are going to remember. Also, she still holds the record of having her signature appear on the most U.S. currency ever printed. That's a Guinness Book of World Records record. And she was the U.S. treasurer when the quarter program, the state quarter program, came out, and also was the treasurer when the complete overhaul design of our currency was instituted. So a lot of records occurred on her watch, so to speak, as U.S. treasurer that will never be duplicated.
What is her place in regard, and I know some people like to talk about this nowadays and some people don't, but we just had the historic nomination of Nan Whaley as the first woman to be nominated by a major party for governor of Ohio.
Right.
What's her place going back to 1969 in the Elgin School Board, first woman for women?
River Valley, I guess it was Elgin, I'm sorry.
Yeah, for women.
Well, I think the distinction is there that, especially at the time that she was elected to the school board, you know, she often says that she couldn't even get a credit card in her own name back in those days, and had to appear as Mrs. With her husband's name, not hers as individual. I don't know. It's really kind of hard. It's really kind of hard to determine that. I think, you know, just the fact that she has done what she has done for the feminist movement. She was really a feminist before the feminist movement became popular. So I think that's probably another distinction that she has.
You know, I was trying to think about this the other day because I was thinking about the politicians from Marion, and we're lucky to have really three that ended up on the national level, and obviously it's
right.
Warren Harding, Norman Thomas, and Mary Ellen. And certainly Mary Ellen, I think, was more prominent than Norman Thomas was. But, you know, Harding had such picadillos, and for all the good things he did, there is always the scuttlebutt about the bad times, and he doesn't rank, high on the list of presidents when those lists come out every year. I can't think of anything with Mary Ellen in which there was ever a bad representation.
I think there's no dark clouds in her history or in her lifetime at all. Most definitely, I don't see anything like that at all.
So that will be tomorrow, and the doors open at 4 p.m. They'll be open till 7 p.m. The ribbon cutting will happen at 5 p.m. Marion County Historical Society. A special guest will be there. Mary Ellen will be there. It's going to be a big event. I think it's a very important day because other than Harding, like I said, national politics, I think she's the one.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And, you know, with Mary Ellen, you know, she at someone that's going to turn 92 this coming August, she is as sharp, well, the old saying goes, she's as sharp as a tack. And that is absolutely true. She's up on everything political that's going on. She's up on the current events. And a lot of people in their 90s just don't have the capability. So, you know, I often tell Mary Ellen, and I always make this statement at our presidential dinners in November, because she's always a guest there, that if Mary Ellen had not accepted the post of U.S. Treasurer when Bill Clinton offered it, I really do think she would have been the first female governor in the state of Ohio.
You know, it very well could have been. You know, that's an interesting story. You know, Fred, I have a question for you here now that we're talking about this, because I think it's interesting. When we look at Mary Ellen's career here on the eve of the dedication of this museum, in such a divisive world where Democrat and Republican seem to mean so much, even on the local level, obviously she had a political party, and obviously she was appointed by a president of that party. Do you think at this point in somebody's life, obviously she still has very strong political beliefs, but do you think that the people who come into the museum, are we seeing more of that these days, that people care what party people belong to, or does it just not matter?
Well, I think in her particular case, it doesn't really matter. I think you're correct in saying that there is a lot of divisiveness in this country, and there are certain factions in the general population that still hold party important to them. But I think the parties have changed so much over the last 50, 75 years that it's a completely different look than it was 100 years ago, even. I've been watching there was a special on the History Channel the last couple of nights on Teddy Roosevelt. I don't know whether you saw it or not, but a great special. They'll probably run it again. But politics, especially back during that era, was tough. The political bosses, the old bosses like the Tweed and the people like that were still very active and held their thumb on politics, and I think a lot of that has passed. However, in some cases today, I see that coming back. But as far as Mary Ellen is concerned, I don't think that means anything. I think she is just such a beloved person that politics goes out the door. And I think people in Marion, especially, and people in the state of Ohio, are so proud of her and proud of what she's done and the recognition that she's brought to our state and especially to this county. Trumps everything else.
You know, Fred, I think I'm right in this, that there have been some buses of school children who have been to see the museum since it
oh,
was...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What's been the reaction so far?
Well, you know, they're third and fourth graders, so I think a lot of it overwhelms them. They don't really understand totally what's going on. We always get good, you know, we always get good feedback from the teachers and so forth. The kids talk about it afterwards. But, you know, this is our way, the Marion County Historical Society's way, with Flynn School, we also do bus groups out there for the children. This is our way of trying to get kids interested in history. Unfortunately, they don't teach it much in school anymore, especially local history. So this is this in part with our presidential dinner and the other things that we do, is our way to kind of maybe open some of these kids' eyes. And believe it or not, over the years with our program like Night at Heritage Hall and the Lynn School thing, we have gotten young people involved, and those young people now are young adults, and they're still interested in history and still helping at Marion County Historical Society. So it all pans out. It's all worthwhile in the end.
We definitely have to learn our local history first.
Absolutely. And one other thing I will say, I am so fortunate to count Mary Ellen among my friends, and I so appreciate her and cherish every moment that I get to spend with her, and I know you do as well.
Absolutely. Thanks, Fred.
Hey, see you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. All right, Fred Malone, Marion County Historical Society. Big day tomorrow. It's the Mary Ellen Withrow Museum ribbon cutting. Now, this will take place at 5 p.m. at the Marion County Historical Society. The Historical Society will open tomorrow at 4 p.m. and be open through 7 p.m. So if you can't make the ribbon cutting, you can still come and see the museum up until 7 p.m. tomorrow night. 57 and a half minutes past the hour here. 76 degrees, sunny skies, 740-751-4038. I know a lot of people call that studio number, but that's the alternate number right now, 740-751-4038. And if all goes well, we will be broadcasting tomorrow from the museum opening, starting at 4 p.m. If something should happen where we don't get on the air for some reason, we will tape it and play it on the air probably Friday. So regardless, we will have some audio, do they call it footage? I don't know, audio information from the event tomorrow. I think we'll get on the air, but you never know with remotes. Remotes are always tricky. Anybody who's ever worked in radio will tell you things can happen that you don't plan on. 58 and a half minutes past the hour, but do tune in at 4:15, see if we're on the air. But as I say, if for some reason we should not get on the air, we will have the information on Friday morning. Boy, this week's blowing right by with Memorial Day on Monday. Coming up on 59 minutes past the hour, High Pollen Day. But apparently that's all going to go away tomorrow, at least the last report I saw. Supposed to cool off and the pollen's supposed to go down for tomorrow. So all the allergy sufferers might get a day of break tomorrow. Again, phone lines are open, 740-751-4038. But what a beautiful morning it is outside. 76 degrees and sunny. First day of June. 21 days till summer. And the longest day of daylight hours coming up on June 21st. Again, Glenn Coble will be on this morning, 10 a.m. till 12 noon, and then a Progressive Life, 12:10. Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman at 4:10 p.m. Live at 5 with Pastor Craig, Nate, and Terry at 5:10. And Trinity Baptist Church's Sunday Sermon at 6:10 p.m. So don't switch the dial. We'll be back in about 15 minutes.
You're listening to WWDH Radio. LP Marion, Ohio.
Anyway, I'm going to give it now, 740-383-9944. We're doing current events and we're going to fly through them here. If you want to join in at any time on any current event, any memory, anything you want to throw on the table, do it right now, 740-383-9944.